F4.
Number 17B.
Yes. Will you forgive me if I go on in the same rhythm? I sit back usually and say, why on earth do people think that they are allowed to do something else than what God does? If God does what love says, that it never loses sight of loveliness, are we allowed to do the very opposite? That we are constantly seeing something in a rotten situation. From where do we take the authority, really, to do something different, where is the very opposite of what God's nature is? You see, that's sin. That's what they declared right at the beginning of the gospel and said, well, sin is not to accept, not to go out from God. That's the sin of the world, not to go out from God. So why should we do that constantly? Why do we say, well, man reflects God and then he does the very opposite? And so we have to get into the habit more and more. And I say we have to get into the habit because everyone knows that he can't do right away, because we have to overcome a thousand and thousand years of traditional belief that are incarnate in our mortal mind, in our human mind, that we have inherited from time past. So it's a new culture. Well, everything is a new culture. Think of the people 500 years ago who thought the earth is flat. They didn't dream that the earth is round. They couldn't figure out that the earth is round. They had really slowly, slowly to be trained into seeing the very opposite. And actually, that training still goes on, because today we only know it, but we don't feel it. We still say the sun rises up in the east and goes down in the west. We still believe in a flat earth, that it is not round, that the earth doesn't turn round. It's still the sun coming up and going down. See, with the intellect we can sometimes grasp something quickly, but until it becomes a feel within ourselves, it takes some kind of a training. So intellectually or thinkingly, we may very easily see the soundness of what John is here telling, love as mind, or what Mrs. Eddy is defining, love as love being never without its manifestation, actually never without its perfect manifestation. And to get that that we can intellectually perhaps follow right now in this classroom, but can we keep that attitude over weeks and months and years and for time immemorial? Can we do that? This is a big job. It's a job of the 7,000-year period that comes along, and it is that which will help the world. And if we can entertain that, it doesn't need a lot of people to entertain it. Just needs a few wise thinkers, which is much better than a wilderness of dullards, Mrs. Eddy says. So a few wise thinkers, a few devoted students of Christian Science. And when I say of Christian Science, I mean the science of the world. I mean that Christian Science which is the world, not an organization, not a religion, not a sect. I mean being, the science of being. So if we can entertain that, it will resound in the world. And we will see it as it will resound in the world. It only needed one Jesus. It didn't need a dozen or 100,000 Jesuses at that time. It just needed one. And that did the trick. It didn't need a many, many, many Mrs. Eddies. It just needed one textbook. And that it does the trick. But naturally, it is reinforced if people catch up that tone, acquaint themselves with that atmosphere, and begin to live and move and have its being or its striving. The translation would be much more to live and move. And instead of having its being, it says, and striving in its being. in this wonderful sense of love that is never without its manifestation. Isn't it? Wouldn't it be something to wake up and to go right through the day with that constant inward resounding and hum and background music that says, you know, love, the perfection of love, the fullness of love, is right, expressed everywhere in everything. It's just that you have to take on a new attitude. Get out from your mortal mind. Get out from your human mind. Get out from your traditional mind. Get out of it. This is a paradigm shift. This is something new. Yeah. Okay. Now, when we say, I've defined love in that way, that it is never without its object, what is that object? That object is mind. So we come from love and mind. It must have an object on which the halo rests, on which perfection rests. So what is that object? Naturally, it doesn't rest on evil, it doesn't rest on mortal man, it rests on mind. So we don't take in any other universe but the universe of mind. And mind is the compound term for the universe of ideas. So what divine love constantly sees and is always wedded to is to its own spiritual ideas. So that's why when we start out with love, we have to have, so to say, mind as its object. Mind's idea, mind's universe of idea as its object. So that's why we will see here this wonderful combination of love and mind, which says that one love has only one thing in mind. If mind only is aware of its own manifestation, then we ask that love is only conscious of mind. That's the manifestation of ideas. So as there is only one mind, as there is only the all mind, all with a capital A, see, very, not quite often, but here and there, the textbook will call mind is all with a capital A. Sometimes she talks about that mind is all with a small a. It just depends what she wants to bring out, if she wants to bring out its own, love's own nature, or if you want to bring out that mind as all is all in all. So if we go out first from the synonymous term, mind, then I begin to see, so in my consciousness I reflect that fact that that love is never without its mind, without its object or manifestation, and that is mind, is always thinking or conscious in the realm of the all mind, which knows no other mind, which knows no erroneous mind, no human mind, nor diseased mind, nor human mind, nor mortal mind, nor anything, nor carnal mind. It only knows the divine mind. And if you think about this in a quiet moment and lean back and look into this infinitude of mind, and you see there everything is expressed as the all mind, and there is no other mind there. So what else do we want to see? Then we have the manifestation of love as the one and only mind, as the light of mind, that mind which knows all, which can see through all, which can know the past, the present, the future, that mind which knows the plan of love, that mind that is all-knowing, therefore is knowing every idea. There is not one situation that mind does not know, and love rests on that object of the divine idea. So this love is that mind which is above all the other so-called beliefs. It's above it. It's in it, it's in the whole universe, it covers the whole universe. It only works through that mind, it never works through another mind, but only through that one mind that is God. And I begin to see the immensity of mind as all in all, as the only mind that is above all, through all, for all, that glorifies just one love. That mind is that one mind glorifying, honoring love. This is quite a different universe. So one can feel that it is just a matter of changing standpoint. We started out in the first hour that change of standpoint is really that what is demanded of us, that we don't go out from the phenomena, that we don't go out from life experience, that we don't go out from the world, that we don't go out from the other sciences, but that we go out from God, from the divine principle. A change of standpoint. So simple, the rule. Huh? It's nothing complicated, nothing intricate. It's just simple as simplicity can be, so to say. Change of standpoint. And second rule, stay with that standpoint. You see, not deviate from that standpoint. When you begin to think from that standpoint, that you stay within the divine categories. Again, I go over it again, just with a little bit of another touch. If love is never without its manifestation, therefore that love is never without the divine mind, the all mind, the only mind, then love is never without the manifestation of the ideas of mind. So you can further deduce and you come to the ideas of mind. So love is never with all the infinite ideas of mind. So that love dwells in the realm of ideas, dwells in the realm of pure ideas, of perfect ideas, in the realm, therefore, of the realm of ideas which are not isolated idea, but which are related idea. Therefore, that love dwells in the realm of the system of ideas, therefore in the divine metaphysics. So we see that love is never without its divine metaphysics, is never without the science of ideas, is never without that those ideas that are always pure, that always perfect, that always have identity, that it's never without those ideas that never change, that don't come and go. It's always one with those ideas that reflect the spiritual power of principle, that reflect therefore the power of taking care of everything that is contrary to the ideas, that we let the ideas be the omni-active idea, the omniscience, omniscient ideas, the omnipresent idea, the omni-active idea. Can you begin to see your widen out your realm? You start first with the one mind and the only mind and the all mind, and then you say, well, mind is only the compound symbol for all the ideas of mind, so that we look out from love only, that we see the metaphysics of ideas, the divine metaphysics, the science of ideas. Then we begin to see that these ideas reflect everything, reflect all the synonymous terms. So from that standpoint of love, I only see a realm of ideas that have power, that have substance, that have identity, unchangeability, ideas that have spiritual power, therefore they have the power of demonstration, ideas that are eternal, that they are exalted, ideas that are conscious of themselves. They know what they are. They know that they are ideas. They know that they are ideas of the God. Ideas that are perfect, that have a perfect plan, that act in a perfect plan. These ideas, can you see, I get the whole universe of ideas. And I close all these ideas with all the qualities of all the seven synonymous terms. In this way, I establish in my consciousness a great, great universe. Yes. So I can see that establishing really in my consciousness the standpoint of love, love never losing sight of loveliness, love that never loses sight of all the ideas, and therefore I have a universe of power, of divine power, of divine wisdom in front of me. I have a universe of divine intelligence in front of me, where only divine intelligence, divine lawfulness is going on. No other law is going on, but the laws of mind, the all laws of mind. No activity is going on, but actually the activity of mind. So that I always see through the physical phenomena, through the evil phenomena. I see right through them and see that behind them is a divine metaphysics at work. So that every crisis is not a crisis, but is a chance for the divine idea. That every crisis is not a crisis that has been established by itself, but is a crisis because there is something going on against the idea, and I know the ideas are more powerful, that the ideas have more intelligence, that the ideas find all the right chance to manifest themselves. I see behind the world, behind the crisis. Yes. So, in the same way, when I look out from love as only the one mind, I see really through disorder. I don't see disorder. I see right behind disorder. And I see that actually a higher order is at work. A higher divine order is at work. And that higher divine order has power. And therefore has a Christ. Those ideas have a Christ. They are not thoughts. They are ideas. They have a Christ. They go and overturn and overturn and overturn and overturn until it comes whose right it is. We know that. We know that over the last 50, 70 years that this idea is going on. And in spite that outwardly it seems that there is crisis, there is chaos, and so on, we begin to see that behind it is something at work which is of the nature of divine metaphysics, and that divine metaphysics is not a dead as a doornail, it's living, it's really living. That divine metaphysics has a Christ. That's what the second part wanted to bring out, that it said that Christ is an activity, and showed the whole matrix of that Christ, how it operates. And now we come to the effect, to the outcome, to Christianity, and can see, don't let yourself be disturbed by crisis. He shows four things then. He says, don't be disturbed by sin. Don't be disturbed, really, by sickness. Don't be disturbed by death. Don't be disturbed by the prince of this world, by personal sin. These are the four great subjects that he's going to present, because every time it happened, he said, this is not what it looks like. It's for the glory of God. Jesus always said, this is for the glory of God, what happens here. Do we have that sense? We only can have that sense if we look through the evil phenomena, which are nothing else but a counterfeit of a fact. It's not a counterfact, it's a counterfeit of a fact that is going on. So right through the history of the whole world, all evolution was nothing else but the divine idea revolving, and by revolving, resolving all that stands in the way. All the resolving of opposite standpoints, of opposite beliefs, of that serpent, the first lie, not to go out from God. That's all that goes on. Yes, I think I have brought out more or less the great tone of love and mind. Yes. Well, think it. Just think about it in a loving way, in a new way. and have the courage to think that way. Not let ourselves be disturbed by the suggestions that come up right away that say, but I have somebody at home who is sick, but I have a business that doesn't work well, but. Yes, from the human standpoint, all these buts seem to be real, but they are not reality, because we go out from a human standpoint. We are not putting our head into the sand by doing it, because, see, that's the point. People would say, well, you have an idealistic sense from love as only seeing mind, but the world is very different. Don't fool yourselves. The world is a rotten world, and humankind is rotten, you know. You see, this is really the serpent. This is really the serpent that says, don't go out from a true standpoint. Why is it the serpent? Because it says that your ideal, love and mind, has no Christ, that it cannot tackle the wrong standpoint. And so because we know that love and mind is just Christianity, which includes within itself the Christ, the whole Christ matrix, it can say, therefore, this ideal of love and mind, of love only seeing the universe of ideas, also includes the fourfold calculus that takes care of all the wrong situations. And so it is not putting our head into the sand or living on cloud nine. That's not true. We live in reality. But we know something more, namely that the divine idea has a Christ, has a Christ. That's why Mrs. Eddy put so much stress on those two translations, the translation of immortal mind, and shows that immortal mind, that God, through the Christ order, has the power to come down to the point of idea, and that idea takes care of the second translation, of the first degree, the second degree, and brings out the third degree. See, ideas have a Christ. Yeah. So this is the standpoint and the atmosphere, perhaps I could say, that pervades this third part. In this third part, you find very much, therefore, that close connection, so to say, from love and mind, from love that is wedded to its idea as one, so that we have a feeling that there is only the one going on. And in this part, John begins to use more and more Jesus' terminology, that he says, and I am that very expression of it. I am. So he says, I am the bread of life. I am the light of this world. Not like John the Baptist who says, I'm a witness that the light will come. Jesus said, I am that. You see, he had that sense of the one mind that is light, and he says, I am that light. Love is never without its expression, without its manifestation. Therefore, I am that mind. I am the light. I am the door to the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I am really the Son of God. I am the resurrection and the life. Can you see how strongly he knew, really, at this point, that love is never without its manifestation, that is never without its object, so that he is always the divine I am. That's quite remarkable, so to say, or that which characterizes, really, that third part, this strong sense I am. The I am-ness, which is naturally a sense of Christianity. Yes. So, we would come really to the text. If you look quickly to the page 28, where there is a summary, just that we have first a great overall sense of what is presented here, and you take page 28, the upper part under A, from the point of view of truth. You can see that he lays it out again in the fourfold manner. Namely, one, Christianity as word, then as Christ, three, as Christianity, four, as science. Can you see that? And the subject in it is very clear and simple. In the word, you have in italics, freedom from sin. So it tackles sin. In Christianity as a Christ, you have in italics, healing the sick. It's the healing of the blind man. So you have, after sin, you have healing. The third one, Christianity as Christianity, you have in italics, resurrection from death. It's Lazarus. So you handle death. Can you see what he does here? He handles those noumenon of evil that besets mankind, the belief that there is sin, sickness, death, that triad of evil. And then he has a fourth one, Christianity as science, and we have there in italics, the prince of this world is cast out. That which lies beneath sin, sickness, and death is really personal sense, mortal mind, the prince of this world, he calls it, is cast out. So, just taking it in a biggish view, you see, it's a very clear-cut presentation. He says, now I'm going to show you that in true Christianity, where love only sees its own idea, and that idea is always perfect, there cannot be any kind of sin, there cannot be any kind of sickness, there cannot be any kind of death, and there can be no kind of personal sense or mortal mind. Isn't that very simple? You see? So the moment we see the structure of a text, it becomes simple. Before, you were just reading nice stories, not seeing that Mrs. Eddy was constantly using, as you know, in the text, sin, sickness, and death, sin, sickness, and death, sin, sickness, and death, because she could see this is the triad of error. And behind it, she said, from where does it all come from? What is the cause of sin, sickness, and death? And she said, it all comes from mortal mind, from personal mind, from a wrong standpoint. So John gives the fourth one too and says, behind sin, sickness, and death is actually only the prince of this world, is only personal sense, is only mortal mind. And if you handle that, you have handled everything. Once he has handled that, then comes B, from the point of view of love, and we don't have anything anymore about sin, sickness, and death. That's wiped out. And you have that wonderful universe of ideas without having to see the glory of sin, the glory of sickness, the glory of death, and the glory of the prince of this world, which is the Son of Man. Isn't that terrific? Yes, say yes. Huh?
Yes.
God. God. Okay, we make a break.